Welcome to another episode of Ordinary Old Catholic Me. Then Jesus came with them to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." He took along Peter and the two sons of Zebedee and began to feel sorrow and distress. Then he said to them, "My soul is sorrowful even to death. Remain here and keep watch with me." He advanced a little, and he fell prostrate in prayer, saying, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me, yet not as I will, but as you will." When he returned to his disciples, he found them asleep. He said to Peter, "So you could not keep watch with me for 1 hour? Watch and pray that you may not undergo the test. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." Withdrawing a second time, he prayed again, "My Father, if it is not possible, let this cup pass without my drinking it. Your will be done." Then he returned once more and found them asleep, for they could not keep their eyes open. He left them and withdrew again and prayed a third time, saying the same thing again. Then he returned to his disciples and said to them, "Are you still sleeping and taking your rest? Behold, the hour is at hand when the Son of Man is to be handed over to sinners. Get up, let us go. Look, my betrayer is at hand." This passage from Matthew chapter 26 has come to my mind more than once over my life, but as I have been seeking to increase my spiritual life, to pray more of late, it comes to my mind more often. And I become more and more aware not only of the urgency to wait and watch with the Lord, but also of its difficulty. The apostles, his selected men, couldn't seem to do it, so it's not a surprise that you or I have a hard time. When I am before the monstrance, and he is within it and not contained by it still, I am with him in Gethsemane. Is that not so? Is that not so that you are with him when you are before the monstrance during Eucharistic exposition? 1 hour. One little hour. And yet, they could not do it. These men who would pass on the teaching of the Lord our God after his death and resurrection and ascension, and yet he asked them to do it. Ultimately, they did. He asks us to do it now, to sit with him, to be attendant to the miraculous things he has done. We faithful Catholics, or aspiring to be faithful Catholics, do we not get it? He is God, you might say. You do say, why did he need anyone to be with him in Gethsemane? Why does he need any of us to be with him in some little church in West Hollywood, in front of the transubstantiated host, which has become him in every real way? He doesn't need it at all. In fact, he needs nothing of us. We have read some version of this truth all throughout our lives, and yet we still don't get it. It's not his need. It's not an agenda. It is not a negotiation. It is not anything we human beings seem to cling to as important in this life. It is unadulterated love. He wants us to wait and watch and be with him, not out of his need, but ours. His divine love brought him to the hypostatic union. I take this from the site called Simply Catholic. Quote, "One of the core teachings about the person of Jesus is traditionally called the hypostatic union. The term developed in the early church, whereby the word hypostatic was used officially at the Council of Chalcedon as a way to express the union of Jesus' two natures. Simply put, it means that in the person of Jesus are two natures, divinity and humanity, in complete unity, without mixture, change, division, or separation, as the Council of Chalcedon famously said so. God took on everything it meant to be human, except sin, God did this to make himself a creature, the one he created, so as to save us from our badly exercised free wills, to give us the chance once again to respond to his love. He wants us to wait with him for us, not for him, although yes, he was burdened in his human nature by the massive reality of what he was about to do, and so he was comforted by an angel. But there was never any doubt that he would do what he was called to do in his human nature, in perfect obedience, because that was the will of God always. If we watch with him, we are doing it in response to his immense love, the depth of which cannot be approached linguistically, in truth. In a kind of paradoxical twist, it seems to me, we are doing it for ourselves to wait and watch with him. Yes, I will wait with you because I finally see what it was you really did when you set in motion your incarnation and let your creatures kill you so you could kill death that we had brought upon ourselves. Do we need more proof? Do I need more proof of the refusal to wait and watch, even to consider doing it, to give any credibility to the story itself? What is happening in the world around us right now? What is happening in your neighborhood, my neighborhood? What is happening in your politics, my politics? What is happening in our schools? What is happening in the very understanding of morality right now, this very minute? Despite the 2,000-year history of Christianity, despite even historical records, small but definite, of the existence of Jesus Christ, of the arguments for God, of the clear reality that when we do anything ourselves, we fail miserably, often cruelly, God is being betrayed again over and over by individuals and groups, sometimes with a great smugness worthy of a Herod or Pontius Pilate or Caiaphas. To me, it's the smugness that is terrifying, because how does one ignore God? You're saying, or my saying, I don't believe in him, doesn't dispose of him. Have we not learned that yet from that little thing called the Bible, where it happened over and over and over again? Have we not learned from our own history, our own tangible history, our so-called creation? And yet, here we are at what does have the bitter flavor of the end times. Are there any of us who will wait and watch with him, who see that the key to our salvation is his pure love and our embracing of it? One thing only, to do his will in love as Jesus came to and did in love the will of the Father. Our parish is now having Eucharistic adoration every Sunday, as well as on First Fridays. If you've listened to this podcast, you know I'm not a morning person, and our daily masses are only at 8:30 a.m. Oh, I go from time to time, and I tell myself that one day I'll be sufficiently able to mortify myself and adapt my late night, late morning schedule to go regularly, but that hasn't happened yet. But we have been short of altar service of late, and yesterday there was a need for someone at the 8:30. Besides that, I have been coming to the realization that I truly need the grace of what is called final perseverance. Ever heard of that? I had, but really did not get what it was about, and I'll tell you, until I had gotten to this particular age, my age, and the age in which we now live, I hadn't really given it full consideration. So let me digress using a blog I ran across called Catholic Strength on this issue and quote from a small excerpt of an entry on the gift of final perseverance. There are lots of places that you can read about it, but I kind of like this. One of the fundamental propositions of the Ignatian exercises is to pray for the grace you need. Thus, if you are impatient, you should pray continually for the virtue of patience. Ask, and it shall be given to you. Luke 11:9. Now, paying heed to the immense wisdom of our Catholic spiritual heritage, it is incredibly prudent to pray for the most important grace of final perseverance. In his 750-page treatise, The Spiritual Life, Father Adolf Tangere makes the following observation, page 68. Quote, "Final perseverance is a singular and priceless gift. We cannot merit it, strictly speaking. To die in the state of grace, in spite of all the temptations that assail us at the last hour, to escape these by a sudden and tranquil death, falling asleep in the Lord, this is truly, in the language of the councils, the grace of graces. We cannot ask for it persistently enough. Prayer and faithful cooperation with grace can obtain it for us." A couple of things I realized as I was reading this. One, I am indeed impatient, and that is one of the problems in my prayer life. I get immediately restless. The second thing is that I have come to realize that every minute is a temptation, and it's begun to scare me a little bit. One of the realities of my personal journey is that I've always been moody. Forget the psychological dimension as far as I'm concerned. These days, it's more the spiritual dimension that concerns me. I see when I sin, when I lose hope, sometimes daily, how easy it could be for me not to persevere day to day, leading to a failure of final perseverance. And I know this indeed, that I cannot do it without God's help. That I cannot do it without God's help. I just can't. So, Miss Never Likes to Get Up Early decided to start small for a big, shall we call it, payoff, not a reward, but a great gift, the gift of final perseverance. I decided that I would seek to attend 9 consecutive First Friday Masses, the First Fridays of the Sacred Heart, 9 months of me doing at least once a month getting up early, which I hate to do, which I've become in the habit of not doing, partly because of my constitution and disposition, but also out of, if I were to be honest, a kind of laziness, though I would deny it if you ask me. And spending 1 hour with him, waiting with him, who asks only one thing, that I love him back, and because of love, live an eternal life with him, well, that's really not a huge ask. Don't know about you, though looking at the world around us, I'm guessing it's a universal problem and maybe an obvious one, but I don't do love easily, not even the kind that's human. So letting God love me and loving him back has turned out to be a tall order. Maybe that isn't the case for you, and if so, I'm truly happy for you, because that is the key. Maybe the way to develop the love in response to his love is to do an Ignatian-type contemplation or start with a basic meditation, either way. I'm not sure how what I'm about to tell you relates to any of this, but here goes. I started my notes of today's podcast yesterday, and then I came back to the notes this morning. And then I went on a tear I've been on a while to pare down the stuff in my apartment, including things that have great meaning to me, my books, my photographs. One thing I've learned these last years, whether people have large families or small, the sentimental stuff seems to have no import to those left behind. Sentimental just doesn't seem to have quite the cachet. And what is often left behind are things sentimental, crowding apartments and houses that someone has to empty and no one wants. I'm seeking to avoid all that, while I admit at the same time preserving some of it on the internet, on my blog, which I'm rather sporadic about. Maybe there's some kind of individual historicity that merges with the national and international one. I admit that I still do have need for some earthly immortality, as impossible as that is, and despite my peripatetic fervor for the eternal kind. Anyway, among the books I ran across was one of my late father's in paperback that I've carried around with me for years and never read, Ship of Fools by Catherine Ann Porter. There was a movie also that, until today, I never watched, made in 1965, the last starring role, the last role at all, that Vivian Leigh acted in, and therein lies a story of the troubles that come with fame and the struggle with mental illness and what's real and what's fantasy and what's eternal. For some reason, though it was a well-received book about the pre-World War II period and the rise of Nazism and the people who populated that time, in this case in a fictionalized version, it is in the microcosm of a ship of people who are blind to their own enormous prejudices, their own selfishness, their own lusts, who pretend to be effectively civilized and knowing. I'd always assumed it was depressing and avoided it. But here I was, paring away, and I knew I needed to read some of these books that I've had, that I had carted from place to place for years and years. So I read it literally over 2 days in a kind of Evelyn Wood sort of way, and indeed it was depressing. My thought was that it could have been called The Ship of Original Sin. Then I wanted to see how the movie approached the unrelenting events. Well, there are no events, the unrelenting aspects of the book. It was condensed, albeit still a long movie, and revised to give a tone from the 1960s of, we've learned to be better, and yes, we ought to recognize ourselves. But what I felt as I finished was that we are no wiser than ever we have been since the dawn of time. And suddenly, the critical nature of Gethsemane, the lifeline that Jesus Christ has offered that we ignore over and over, flashed in on me, and here I was, back to my notes. We cannot save ourselves. Only his love, accepted, will save us. Or we repeat and repeat the evil that is the inheritance of original sin, and then everything really does become meaningless. When you are, when I am, before the Blessed Sacrament exposed, and thinking of Gethsemane, and close my eyes, if I can just sit still long enough, and forget everything else, accept what he is about to do, and how he's under the full measure of sin, of all of us, past, present, future, and how he may sorrow indeed, but mostly because of our refusals, so many of our refusals to see what he is doing, what he has done, and to love him, comfort him with what he does not need but wants to give us, love. If we love him, then we will want to stop sinning, to be under the sentence of death with nothing afterward but an unrequited longing, or hell, depending on how far the consequence of original sin took us. We will want to sit with him and hold him for that thing that he did, that God did, when he just didn't have to. I am still far from doing this, from really seeing what is plain to see, hiding in plain sight. The more we wait with him, the more we walk with him, the more we can resist with an everlasting grace a final fall, the more we can persevere until the end, and it must be to the end, or it is not enough. Every minute is a battle. Every minute he offers grace, his armor. But we have to exercise our will freely to say the daily and the final yes to him. We want to be God's fools, not the fools of a transient world. So ends another ordinary old Catholic me. I have a feeling some of the books I'm pulling out of my library and trying to read are going to be the sources of some other programs in the next few weeks. I have a couple right now. One is called The Culture of Narcissism, which was published back in the 1970s, and I think gives a pretty good idea of what we're looking at right now, and was, I don't want to say it was beginning then, but it was certainly in progress then. So anyway, if you're enjoying the show, tell your friends and family about it, and keep listening. And I'll talk to you next week.